The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight was the first night, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, that in the humble abode, I was able to set up the two TV setup, and I've had it going for a while. Obviously, I had it throughout the football season, but, you know, my second screen 6-7 months ago was my laptop, or my third screen was an iPad, and now I have it set up where both TVs are in play permanently. One of them ends up being a work monitor for my significant other, Kate, half the time, but now it's my time to shine. So I was so fired up that at 7 o'clock tonight, I had the Yankees on one TV, I had the Mets on the next TV, and I was just so fired up thinking, wow, this is life. This is what I intended to do in setting this up many moons ago. So that put a little extra pep in my step. Unfortunately, for those of you who are New York Mets fans, what the Mets gave me on Wednesday night is a whole lot of material to do a sports talk show. What the Mets gave you on Wednesday night, a whole lot of vodka. It starts first with this simple narrative. And Mike Fliegelman and I were talking about it yesterday when we signed off. We talked about it literally as I signed on and we were just shooting the breeze saying hello. There was a reason why there was a ton of short money, including our buddy Eagle Eye Picks, by the way, who was all over the Boston Red Sox. And I think it was a combination of two things. One, the Red Sox due to win a game. And two, if you know anything about the Mets' history in Jacob deGrom starts, they simply don't score for the guy. They tore the cover off the ball two games at Fenway Park. That run support for Jake, now, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you had a representative starter out there for Boston in Nathan Eovaldi, but the run support nonetheless completely disappears. This is a tight game. This is a low scoring game. But yet, at the end of six innings, it's set up pretty nicely for the Mets. Cano gets on base. Jimenez with the big go-ahead hit. And the Mets have a one-run lead, and you're all fired up about it. And you're saying, here we go. We're going to win three in a row. We're going to be feeling good about things. We're going to be rocking and rolling. And then in comes Seth Lugo in the top half of the seventh inning. And as we know, and listen, if you've listened to this show, you know I am a big believer. Big, big believer in Lugo pitching out of the bullpen. Lugo doing his thing. I think Lugo is stupendous. Lugo had an off night. He ends up giving up a game-tying home run in the top half of the seventh inning to Christian Vasquez, who is a nice catcher, by the way. He's a good little player for the Red Sox. He's turned himself into a very good offensive player. Lugo has the off night, gives up the game-tying home run, hurts. But if you're thinking about this game in a battle of the bullpens, the Met bullpen still should be able to outlast the Red Sox bullpen. So even when this game is tied, I'm sitting there saying to myself, you know what? Mets are still going to find a way to win this game because who the hell knows who's coming in to pitch for Boston? And there are a couple of things that I am going to get on the manager for tonight. The first being this. Seventh inning, Josh Osich. That's right. Let me say that one more time. Josh Osich is on the mound for the Boston Red Sox. The same guy who got lit up the other night when he pitched at Fenway Park on Monday. In the seventh inning, couple runners on base. Luis Rojas tries to, in my opinion, get a little too cute. He sends J.D. Davis up to hit for Dominic Smith. You want to know why I didn't like that move? Because I knew the minute you send up J.D. Davis, they're going to send a right-handed reliever in. Not that their bullpen is great. Not that Heath Hembree is exactly lighting the world on fire, but the Osich-Smith matchup was a matchup I liked. Dominic Smith's been swinging a pretty hot bat. I thought that was, for my money, over-managing. That was, in many ways, paralysis by analysis, if you will. And J.D. Davis struck out to end the bottom half of the seventh inning. I did not like that move. Now, let's get to the eighth inning. Luis Rojas better be careful with Justin Wilson, because I like Justin Wilson. I'm a fan of Justin Wilson. I think he ran into a little bit of bad luck with the single against the shift from Mitch Moreland to give the Red Sox the lead. But he has used Wilson a ton over these first couple of games. And if you compare his workload to the workload of Dellin Betances, you look at Dellin Betances, he hasn't pitched a whole lot. So I'm not going to kill Rojas specifically for using Wilson tonight. It's just more noticing his overusage and noticing how much he has pitched immediately right out of the gate. Why is that not the case for Dellin Betances? So that's something to be mindful of. That's something to watch. They got to Justin Wilson. Single from Pilar. Walking Xander Bogaerts. They put a little small ball with the bunt. They made the right move walking J.D. Martinez, who's by far and away the best hitter in this Red Sox lineup. And then when he gets Devers to strike out, I thought he was getting out of the inning. It was a very, very cheap single. To me, after you give up the hit to Moreland, that's when I'm going righty on righty. I'm not letting Wilson get in the bat against Christian Vasquez there. And it ended up leading to a couple of runs, which ended up being significant. And the reason it ended up being significant is twofold. Number one, Cespedes comes up, bottom half of the eighth inning, hits a home run and makes it a 6-4 game. Number two, the reason it ends up being significant is the events that took place in the bottom half of the ninth inning. And that is when the Red Sox turned to Brandon Workman, who basically tried to put Wednesday night's game on a silver platter for the New York Mets. He tried, trust me. He tried to put this game on a silver platter for the Mets. And unfortunately for the Mets, they were not able to take it. You're down 2 in the ninth inning. You get a walk from Brandon Nimmo. You get a walk from Jeff McNeil. You get a bloop single over the head of Mitch Moreland by Pete Alonso. And you are thinking you are set up. Bases loaded, nobody out. If I'm a Mets fan, I am thinking worst case scenario, I'm coming away with the tie game and I'm going to the top half of the 10th inning. I'm thinking that is the worst case scenario. And this is where we got to get on the Mets offensively, who left a small village on the base paths. Starting first with Conforto. Conforto's been swinging a hot bat these first couple of games. His at-bat against Workman stunk. And this is where I got to take Michael Conforto and Yoenis Cespedes to task. Brandon Workman is all over the place. He's got absolutely no idea where the ball is going. No clue. 2-0 count. Take a damn strike. Is that too much to ask or what? Take a damn strike. You're not facing Aroldis Chapman. You're not facing Josh Hader. You're facing Brandon Workman. Take a damn strike. Bad, bad at bats. Now, did Rafael Devers in many ways save the game? Sure did. Because if he doesn't make that diving catch on the infield single from Davis, another runner is going to score. If that ball ends up going in the outfield, they're probably tying the game. But it doesn't excuse the at-bat quality from Cespedes and from Conforto. You got to be smarter there in that situation. You got to know what's going on within the game. So take a strike. Then you get to Robbie Cano. And it's funny. Robbie Cano, even in a game in which he has a couple of hits, ends up in some way kind of wearing the goat horns. because he came up with a couple of runners on base earlier in the game, and he grounded into a double play. And then he comes up, bases loaded, two outs, and I have to admit, watching it live, I thought Cano won the game or tied the game for the Mets. No, he would have won the game. They were down one. I thought he won the game for the Mets. When that ball was hit off the bat, I was like, wow, it's getting down. And you see Peraza coming into your screen, making the play. And for Boston, it ends up being, for them, a much-needed win. But I look at it as a very disappointing loss for the Mets. This is a game they easily could have won. They didn't score early for Jacob DeGrom. They left a ton of runners on base. And when you have bases loaded with nobody out in the bottom half of the ninth inning, you have to come away with a tie score. Against that Red Sox bullpen, you have to come away with a tie score. I need better at-bats from Conforto and from Cespedes. I need better at-bats. You can't be 2-0 up in the count and hacking away they did. No Gueno. No good. This is a game that's going to tick you off no matter what. It's going to tick you off, I think, that much more when you play in a 60-game season. Because these games take on more significance. These games take on more meaning. And you could tell up and down, talent-wise, in the Met bullpen, it's a far better bullpen than it was a year ago. There's more talent out there. But this first-year manager, Luis Rojas, has got to be careful about the way you're using certain guys. I've noticed that already here with Justin Wilson. You don't want Wilson to hit end of August, early September, and all of a sudden that 95, 96 that he's throwing now is down to 92 and 93. A guy like Dellin Betances should be getting more work in this bullpen. That's something I've noticed 1 week in already. I feel like we have not gotten enough Dellin, and the Mets brought him in. They paid him a good amount of money. I don't need to see Dellin Betances coming for him batter. Get more usage out of him. Anytime you slip up in a DeGrom start, you're going to feel agitated. Now, you could say on the flip side, JJ, the Mets got a win in a Michael Wacha start. That's true. And they got themselves a win in David Peterson's start. That's also true. But when you got a bunch of games coming up with your arch nemesis, and the Atlanta Braves have been the Mets' arch nemesis for quite a while, and over the last 2 years, they've ate their lunch. Mets can't beat them in games that really count. Don't tell me at the end of the year last year when they won 2 out of 3. Those games meant nothing for the Mets. In games that really mean something, they have not delivered. At SunTrust, I was going to say Turner Field's not Turner Field any longer. Or Citi Field. They just have not delivered. You got DeGrom on the mound against a bad Red Sox team, that's a game you want to win. And then when you get that lead in the top half of the seventh inning, bullpen's got to do the job. They did not. Seth Lugo will on that. Justin Wilson will on that. But the Met lineup, to me, is the biggest reason you lost this game here on Wednesday night. Not the bullpen. Can't have those opportunities with runners on base and come up as small as they did. Poor quality at bats. And a brutal loss 1 week into a regular season. Brutal loss. It happens. But for the Mets, they have now two, if you think about it. The Saturday game against the Braves, brutal. This game here against the Red Sox, brutal. I'm going to be adding these up over the course of the year. Maybe I'll keep a little tally. I'll put it on my computer screen for those of us keeping score at home. We'll see how many exactly fit that category over the 60. Right now, the count is at 2. It's 1:18 here on this Thursday morning. It's JJ After Dark, John Jastrzemski. We're right here on the Fan. We got a lot to get to. We'll get to Gerrit Cole's second start in a Yankee uniform. It was a rocky first inning, and then a dominant 5 innings, and then all of a sudden Gerrit Cole lost it in the 7th inning. But when the Yankees play the Orioles, odds are good things are going to happen down at Camden Yards.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.